This is The Cable.
How much retail ownership is in stock?
The tech story is front and center.
What will this wind up doing to the cost curve?
Your connection from the London market close to the US market action.
A significant sell-off in European assets.
But it feels like a lot of these stocks have already priced that in.
This is a stock that is increasingly being shorted.
The Cable with Guy Johnson and Alex Steele.
Behavioral challenges from the pandemic could linger for years
on Bloomberg Radio.
Good evening, welcome. You're listening to The Cable. We're live on DAB Digital Radio. I'm Guy Johnson alongside Alex Steele in New York. The President of the United States has just stepped out of the White House delivering comments on inflation. We will bring you those in just a moment. This ahead with the big data tomorrow. CPI data on both sides of the Atlantic. We get data from the United States and then we get more information coming from Germany as well. Big day for inflation tomorrow. The president addressing that in advance. What we're seeing, Alex, in the markets is quite a turnaround. Now, turnaround Tuesday usually means that you turn around from a bleak Monday. What we're seeing today is an intraday turnaround. We were positive. The Nasdaq is kind of flirting with positive negative. The S&P is down by 0.3%. Europe finished just in positive territory, but none of it felt particularly convincing.
Yeah, I was going to call it dead cat bounce earlier, and I was like, nah, let's be more creative with turnaround Tuesday. I should have called it a dead cat bounce. And it's hard to know the why behind it, but if I take a look at the two-year, it hit its low on the yield. It hit its low around in the 10 o'clock hour, and then Michael McKee had an interview with Loretta Mester, the Cleveland Fed president, and she was pretty hawkish, and it made very clear her sole focus is to get inflation down to 2%, and it's hard to not see how that happens without serious demand destruction, without some kind of recession. And during that, you saw the two-year start to climb a little higher, bid still in the long end, and you saw equity start to roll over as well.
Absolutely. I think there's going to be a few bumps along the road, as Loretta Mester suggested that there might well be. We need to talk about it. We'll talk about it in just a moment. You get a hot number tomorrow on inflation, kind of nearer to the 8.5. I think you're going to get quite a big market outcome. You get a number below 8, you're going to get quite a big market outcome. I think there's a lot to play for over the next 24 hours. That's the market picture. That's just one angle on all of this. Let's get the bigger picture now. Over to you, Charlie.
Thank you very much, Guy Johnson. Indeed, a busy Tuesday. Boris Johnson is vowing to ramp up pressure on Vladimir Putin's cronies by driving dirty money out of the UK as the Prime Minister sets out an agenda that's also heavy on electoral priorities, including cutting pandemic-hit hospital waiting lists and boosting disadvantaged regions. In an opening of Parliament full of symbolism today, heir to the throne, Prince Charles stood in for the first time for Queen Elizabeth, who was unable to attend because of mobility issues. Queen Elizabeth, by the way, is 96. For Johnson, the new legislative session is a chance to get his administration back on track after months of bruising scandals, including becoming the first sitting premier found to have broken the law. Germany is set to become a liquefied natural gas powerhouse within a year as it fast-tracks new import terminals to slash its dependence on Russian fuel. The government will this week announce legislation to cut the approval process for such facilities to a tenth of the usual time frame. It plans 4 floating terminals, allowing it to replace at least 70% of Russian gas imports and marking a significant U-turn in energy policy after years of resisting costlier American LNG. Citigroup is changing the leadership in one of the teams linked to that flash crash in European markets earlier this month. This according to Reuters, citing 3 people familiar with the matter. That is the latest from the news desk. Guy Johnson, back to you now in London.
Charlie Pellett, thank you very much indeed. The issue with Germany, which I think is interesting here, is that it's having a few issues in its negotiations with Qatar. So Qatar is going to provide it with a lot of that LNG. The US will provide it with some of it, but those negotiations are going a little slowly. European gas, certainly one of the narratives that we're having to deal with when it comes to this inflation story. Alex, let's talk about where we've been over the last 24 hours. You get back to work on a Monday, and all hell breaks loose. I'm not drawing a connection. I'm just saying that that's what happened.
Okay, but hasn't hell been breaking loose for like 4 months?
Let's park that for one moment. So Alex comes back on a Monday, and all hell breaks loose. Markets go down. And it just didn't feel like a convincing story. It didn't feel like a convincing sell-off. So actually, that's my first starting point. There are a lot of stocks that didn't take part in it. You didn't see volatility rising dramatically. There's a whole kind of number of kind of touch points that traders look for to see whether or not this is going to be actually a tradable flaw, whether this is a significant flaw. And I don't think a lot of those were ticked yesterday. And as a result, I think the bounce today feels really unconvincing off it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, 100%. Also, sort of, who's in there selling? Like, when we know that, then we'll get a better idea of what capitulation could look like. Well, joining us now to help us break all of that down is Kriti Gupta, over joining us from Bloomberg. So, Kriti, we're talking about how yesterday you had a sell-off. Guy was just talking about how unconvincing the sell-off was and how unconvincing the rally was today. Who's actually selling stuff right now?
It's really interesting what's going on here. I love how guys just like, I don't believe any of this. To me, what's been happening, let's go big picture here because you guys mentioned the last 4 months. Basically, what happened was institutional investors, the big players, the hedge funds, they got out of these massive tech positions earlier. And when you saw the tech kind of tech stocks hit first or sell off first, the rest of the market didn't follow. And that's where a lot of people started saying, this is the value trade. It's coming back. Energy is still that defensive hedge. It's the inflation hedge. And that's in those early days where you started to see tech take down the entire market. But underneath the hood, energy, materials, utilities would all rally or still end in the green. That has since transformed into a bigger picture where you start having bigger institutional players saying, okay, we're just going to capitulate here and we're just going to let the stock market reset. And that's really where you saw moments, or I want to say a couple weeks of where you did see this bounce back, a lot of people questioning of whether or not we are going to hit in that bear market. And the players then were the retail traders. Now you're seeing not only the hedge funds pull out, you're seeing institutional players pull out. You're also seeing this retail selling. And also keep in mind, it's been going on so long that volume is now kind of running low as well relative to the volatility that you've seen in the last couple of months. So as we were kind of snowballing, now it just kind of seems like the norm seems to be selling. And that's really where you start to see technicals come in.
So Dave Lutz over at Jones Trading has like a checklist of things for a kind of major capitulation. Heavy volume, no. Panic, not really.
Yeah.
A lot of equities were pretty quiet. Put call ratio, not doing anything significant. Did you get a lot of gaps? No, just felt like a lower move kind of all the way through the day. You did see a little bit of kind of cross asset. Are you going to get a bit of VAR drawdown? So there was some elements of that. But this feels like a functioning market, which is kind of what the Fed is going to be looking for. And Loretta Mester was talking about this. She sees this as a functioning market, and you need to get a repricing. We're not getting anything here, Kriti, that's going to spook the Fed into kind of reversing course at all.
Yeah, and I would totally agree with that. This isn't panic selling. And you've heard that over and over again from a lot of derivatives traders. They said, well, all the action, yeah, on the surface level, it looks like you're seeing these 2%, 3% declines in the stock market. But the way people are playing the market is they're hedging through the options market. They're not actively liquidating all their positions and turning to cash, although that's what it looks like on the surface. I would totally agree with you, Guy, and Dave Lutz, by extension. I think something else to keep in mind here is the repricing bit that you mentioned, because something I'm hearing over and over and over again is people are looking at valuations again, which is something we haven't really heard in the last 2 years. It's been thematic trading all the way. And now, from what I've understood, is that the S&P 500, we're trading, I want to say, at a 20 PE multiple. Investors want to be able to see that multiple go down to a 16 or 18, given that some of these pandemic booms you're already seeing kind of falter in the likes of some of the other growthier stocks, Peloton, Zoom, for example. And there is this fear that tech isn't going to keep up just yet, even though a lot of these big heavyweights are still the fastest growing companies in the S&P 500. Investors just want to see that the valuations are still factored in.
Well, I like that you brought up valuation. Julie Beal was on The Open, and she was talking about Halliburton versus Google and how amazingly their estimated PE on a 12-month basis is basically the same, and how you would not have thought that, like, even a few months ago.
Yeah.
And is that kind of valuation actually correct? And then to answer that question, I feel like you need to know what the Fed's terminal rate is and how much farther they go above it. And if you don't know, how can you possibly know how to value Halliburton, how to value Google?
Yeah, I totally agree. I would say the one caveat to that, or the one disclaimer to that, is look at the sectors that you're comparing here, because ordinarily that's a comparison that totally makes sense. But a lot of what's been driving this energy story has been a play on commodities as opposed to the fundamentals of the company themselves. And I think perhaps one of the reasons, or one of the bear cases for energy stocks right now, is that a lot of them aren't ramping up production or saying that they want to do it for capital discipline. And if you're not able to take advantage of those profits, then how does that factor into your end earnings, despite the fact that I think a lot of people were using energy, once again coming back to that thematic trading theme, as the new defensive play, which used to be what tech was. So I wonder if you're starting to see this removal or this kind of rewinding of some of these big tech names like Microsoft, like Alphabet, for example. Is energy next in perhaps a little bit of a lag in that as some of these commodity prices come down, if we see peak inflation in the rearview mirror tomorrow, do you start to see these energy companies start to rewind as well and remove these massive premiums that they have on them?
Let's talk about tomorrow.
Let's do it.
Tomorrow, yep, Wednesday, halfway, we get the CPI number. Last number 8.5, survey number year on year we're talking about here, headline inflation out of the United States, 8.1. If that number comes in closer to 8.5, what do you think is going to happen? If that number comes in, say, below 8, what happens? Like, inflation is the core of all of this. Hot, cold tomorrow, what kind of volatility can we expect?
Well, I think if it comes cold tomorrow, then I think immediately you see buying. And I think that's because there's already this narrative in the market that March was the peak of inflation. So if you see it come cold, that's actually going to be good news. And I think you're going to see buying on top of that and the repricing on that. I would argue that you would also see yields come down even further. You're already seeing about eight basis yep. point move in yields right now. If it comes hot, though, I don't necessarily think there would be a change in the trade. I don't think it would move the market as much as it would if it came in cold, because it seems like the norm, at least in the past year, has been inflation surprising to the upside. And continuously, that's been the market expectation. So even though 8.1% is a very high number, if it doesn't surprise to the upside, that's a bigger story, because it means that there's a decisive different trend from what you've seen in the last, I want to say, year and a half.
Well, I can tell you that Biden definitely wants it to be a surprise to the downside, but you have the base effects, which I think we have to also remember to strip out, because we are going to start hitting weaker base effects there. President Biden still speaking, by the way, saying that increasing competition is going to bring down overall prices, supply chain snarls, which I should point out was already happening before COVID with the trade war, is going to help fight inflation. I mean, he is working hard to find any way to make it easier for households to digest these higher prices.
Yeah, and I think you're 100% right. I think when you look at inflation, you have to separate the pre-war inflation and the post-war inflation, because pre-war you were looking at used cars and truck prices higher, shipping prices higher, chip shortages. You were looking at insane housing prices, a wage price spiral. Post-war, the conversation has shifted even more to the commodity space. So you have to look at what's actually driving the market. I think in the last inflation report, used cars and truck prices, essentially perhaps emblematic of the pre-war inflation, had started easing a little bit. So it does, at the end of the day, come down to the commodity story. And although we've seen oil prices come back down from, I think, 148 in mid-March, I want to say, you haven't seen food prices do that or metal prices do that yet. And I think that's going to be one of the key concerns when it comes to supply chains. Also, speaking of supply chains, not to drag this out too much, but the new narrative I'm continuously hearing is not necessarily inflation anymore, but do the exports actually make it out of China and make it out of Germany? Because if they don't, then you go right back to the pre-war issues that you had.
Talking of used cars, how is Jasper?
I was just going to bring up Jasper. I'm glad that I got Jasper in, when did I get it? July.
For those who don't know, Jasper is a used car.
Which it was a big question.
Green used car. Jasper green used car.
So we were, you know, debating when to do it. We eventually just pulled the plug. I think it was July of last year. And it was a big deal because there were like three cars on the lot. Like there was like no inventory. I felt like I called a good time to buy it, but it may have been done some damage. I did a parallel parking job in dark once, and it was really bad scene. I got some scrapes. Jasper's headlight is all messed. It's a little rough right now, I'm not going to lie.
Oh, man.
It's been a tough start to the year. Kriti, thanks very much indeed. Really appreciate it. I think it's going to be a bumpy ride, certainly into tomorrow's inflation number. That number out at around 8:30. We'll obviously have some great coverage lined up. As I say, the survey number is 8.1. And we are expecting a little bit of a bumpy ride around that, Alex. But I think it's going to be the main event tomorrow, without a shadow of a doubt. It's interesting that the president is basically trying to get out in front of it.
Yeah, I wonder what that means.
So that thought occurred to me earlier as well.
Yeah. And you see, so for the you guys obviously are not seeing it, but his background, it says lowering costs, tackling inflation, lowering costs. Like, this is some serious messaging that they're trying to do. And when I was doing, guys, some prep to come back to the office, a lot of people were also pointing to the fact that lower volatility prices are starting to rise, and that that's kind of what they want to pay attention to. Like, where's housing doing, etc.
Okay. In the UK, inflation is also a problem, but apparently the Prime Minister thinks that he can't do enough to fully insulate the British public from that, despite probably a lot of protestations that he should be doing more. We will talk about the UK economy next. We also had some retail data out a little bit earlier on. It was the Queen's speech, or the Charles speech. That's next. This is Bloomberg.
This is The Cable with Guy Johnson and Alex Steele on Bloomberg Radio.
Good evening. Welcome back. 18 minutes past the hour. The Queen gave it a miss this year. Prince Charles stepped in, which I think was an interesting moment in time for the UK. Maybe some questioning the idea that we could be heading towards a regency with Charles stepping in on a fairly sort of significant basis going forward from here. The Queen couldn't address Parliament at the opening of Parliament because of, quote, mobility issues. Boris Johnson's government effectively laying out its legislative programme for the coming year. The Prime Minister promising measures to support the UK economy, and he refocused on sort of tackling regional inequalities as well. He was certainly keen to point out that his government is taking steps to deal with the cost of living crisis, but he did warn that the government could not fully insulate Britons from the impact that we are seeing around the world when it comes to soaring inflation. We are refocusing back away from the kind of away from the pandemic, back towards the levelling up agenda. Philip Aldrich joining us now from Bloomberg Economics to discuss this. In terms of kind of moving the dial for the British economy, was there anything here that would have done that?
No, there's little piecemeal things that people have been talking about for a while. So there's devolution plans to try and get more power into regional areas. As this is part of the levelling up, it's a sort of a key plank of the levelling up plan.
To make the economy more dynamic, you have better knowledge at a local level. Therefore, you can
They spend the money more effectively, and rather than having to go through central government to ask for cash. So there's a bit there. You know, they've been making a great deal about this kind of what they love to call the bonfire of red tape. It's the cutting back, trimming back the regulations.
The Brexit dividend,
as it were. I mean, we've heard about bonfires of red tape for many, many years, and they haven't seemed to have released those animal spirits in any particular fashion. So this is another one of those moments where they're hoping that a deregulatory drive is gonna deliver some kind of some growth bonanza. So there's nothing in there which, you know, will sort of suggest it's going to be anything transformational.
There's no Thatcherite moment coming.
No, there was nothing super, super exciting here. Obviously, there was actually surprisingly a focus on the public finances. So they seem to be saying, they're saying, you know, a pound spent today is a pound less to spend in investment. I mean, some people would question whether that is the case. You know, if you're getting more for each pound that you spend in returns than you borrow, you could borrow a bit and spend on investment. But they're clearly making the point that they're worried about the public finances and the state of the public finances.
It is now seriously the time to be worried about public finances? I mean, I just feel like every country's in a deep pile of pain, and that you take away fiscal spend in some capacity, like the UK is doing, and like where's the upside? How is Guy going to buy more stuff? He's already bought jeans. He's done for like the next couple years. It's over.
Yeah, there is an economic case for putting more money in people's pockets right now, because obviously that means that they'll keep the economy going, and hopefully that means that there's less long-term damage as a result. You know, they're obviously quite worried about high levels of inflation, and there is some concern in government that you will just make the problem worse if you just put more money in people's pockets to spend. But at the moment, and actually to be fair, they're talking a sort of public finance game, that there's a bit where Boris Johnson did say that the Chancellor will have some thing to announce in the coming days, which looks like it will be something to help people who are really, really struggling with their energy bills. And
but we're already starting to see the effects of this. The retail data that came through a little bit earlier on, people clearly are being hit, clobbered fairly hard by this. Is there an expectation that that gets significantly worse? At the moment, the public finances, you could argue, actually are in fairly good state because the tax take has gone up. If we're heading towards a recession, as the Bank of England suggests, and you look at the kind of the retail data, and this is a consumer-driven economy, what impact on the public finances then?
Yeah, I mean, if there's this is the thing. If there's a recession, then the public finances do start to suffer because you lose tax receipts, and that's never. I mean, growth is the great panacea for the public finances. So it doesn't really make sense to cut aggressively right now or to raise taxes aggressively right now.
If you're forcing the economy towards that recession.
If you're basically squeezing life out of the economy at a time when the problem is that actually there is talk of the Bank of England says there is going to be a recession. It's not actually going to be a very severe recession. It's just that there's a quarter of there's like two quarters over the space of 3 quarters. So
does that imply though that the BOE is not going to be anywhere near aggressive as the Fed then? Like, they talk it, but did they do it?
Yeah, they certainly were trying to talk down markets at the inflation report, at the monetary policy report, from the aggressive tightening that was priced in. So, it doesn't sound like there's going to be a combination of a strong push on public finances if on the one hand you're saying that the Chancellor's going to come back and help people and the Bank of England is trying to say that the monetary policy tightening in markets is not we're kind of signaling it's not going to be as severe as that. So you're not going to see this choking of the economy.
What is going to slow the UK economy down? What are the factors? We've got a labour market that is very, very tight. Clearly, there's an input cost story that is an issue. There is a food and kind of shelter issue. If the government could do anything right now, how could it tackle some of these issues?
The place where the spending, long term, you've got to get business investment up. So you've got to get businesses spending. You've got to boost confidence in the short term, so that companies can feel that they can keep hold of staff and keep investing. The methods to do that are to help support consumption at the moment, and also to provide sort of tax reliefs or a stable tax framework for businesses to operate within.
The Boris Johnson government. Stability, absolutely front and centre. Thank you very much indeed, Philip Aldrich, joining us from Bloomberg Economics. We are going to see, obviously, CPI data out of the US and Germany tomorrow. It's going to be interesting to see what their reads look like. This is Bloomberg.
This is The Cable with Guy Johnson and Alex Steele on Bloomberg Radio.
Good evening, London. It is 5:30 where you guys are. It's 12:30 right here in the U.S. as I finally get to experience this whippy action that I've been hearing Guy talk about over the last few months. We had a lot of whipsaw happening here. It looked like we were going to see a bounce within the S&P today. We did, and then it slowly reversed. John Williams of the Fed came across as very much like, we can totally do the soft landing thing. Loretta Mester, much more pessimistic about that, very much seems like she wants to tackle that inflation number down to 2% and is willing to tolerate volatility, demand destruction, maybe a recession, in order to do that. And that's sort of now starting to weigh on markets. Also, Peloton didn't really help there. That's the record low. It's pretty ugly. And Guy, at the same time, we're looking ahead to the CPI data tomorrow here in the U.S., Germany, as well as China. And President Biden literally feels like he's trying to throw everything and the kitchen sink to bring those numbers down.
Absolutely. I don't think he's got any choice. I know that the midterms may be about Roe versus Wade, but at the moment, it feels like most people care about inflation in the States.
Yeah.
Gasoline prices today at record levels.
Yeah.
This is the problem the president has got to figure out and do so pretty quickly.
Yeah, it's brutal.
I don't know how he does it, is my honest kind
of thinking on this. The latest headline is quite interesting. He says that they're looking at whether to drop some tariffs on China, because you could argue that this sort of supply chain issue
That's
and shortage
great.
And stuff started before.
That's great, but you've got to get the stuff out of China.
Yeah. Well, they have to actually make it, just in case they shut down.
Then they've got to get it on a ship, and then that ship's got to get across the Pacific, and it's got to find a berth at either Long Beach or LA or wherever it's going. And to be honest, that's still a struggle. So yeah, I'd be interested to know what impact that would have, because I think there's probably massive other problems that need to be solved beforehand.
Yeah, and one in that sequencing is they got to get some diesel there in order to move the ship. Okay, there's that too, and that's in short supply. We'll talk about all that in just a moment. President Biden has a busy day now. He's going to meet with Mario Draghi. Just want to get some headlines here with Charlie Pellett.
Hi, thank you very much indeed, Alex Steele. Here's what's going on this Tuesday. Lots of moving parts today. The UK will extend its price cap for energy bills beyond 2023 as it seeks to help 22 million households cope with rising costs. The measure, announced during the annual Queen's speech to Parliament, is in the government's energy security bill. It aims to provide the legal framework needed to achieve ambitious net zero emissions goals while keeping energy affordable for households. A video call between the European Union and Prime Minister Viktor Orban to discuss proposed sanctions on Russian oil imports that Hungary is resisting has been postponed, while the Hungarian leader did speak with French President Emmanuel Macron on energy issues. Tesco chairman John Allen says many customers are struggling to afford to heat their homes and feed their families as the cost of living becomes unbearable for some UK consumers. In an interview with BBC Radio 4, Allen called for a windfall tax on profits for energy producers to be paid back to those most in need of help with energy bills. And Boris Johnson is cracking down on what he calls the small minority of selfish protesters who use tactics such as attaching themselves to buildings in England and Wales, actions which the government says brings havoc to people going about their daily lives. Back in 2019, climate activist Extinction Rebellion blockaded the London Stock Exchange by gluing themselves across entrances. That is the latest from the news desk. Alex Steele, back to you now here in New York.
Gluing themselves. That's got to hurt a little bit there. All right, Charlie.
Indeed.
Thank you very much.
Reminds me of my marriage.
So many things.
I was waiting for that.
I thought you would say. Okay, so we were just talking about President Biden. He just wrapped up a speech about inflation, sort of wrapping it into maybe we're going to drop some tariffs on China, trying to address the supply chain issues, really throwing everything in the kitchen sink there. Now, he's also meeting with Mario Draghi as well, who's really been a huge push to ban Russian oil and natural gas imports into Europe. So I want to sort of get a deeper take on that. Josh Wingrove joins us. Now, Josh, what are we expecting from Draghi and Biden later?
Yeah, I think it's a bit of a jump ball still, but the natural gas issue is really at the forefront. Italy is second behind Germany in terms of imports. And the big challenge that the U.S. and others have when it comes to displacing Russian natural gas imports is that a lot of it goes by pipeline, and there just aren't facilities, things like LNG terminals, to replace it from other areas that aren't, you know, connected by a land pipeline. And Italy is one of those such countries. So at the end of March, when Biden was in Europe, they announced a deal saying, hey, Europeans are going to pledge to, you know, buy a minimum amount of LNG over the coming years through to 2030 from the U.S. They hope that that puts bait on the line for U.S. producers and maybe sort of tips projects over to a final investment decision to expand U.S. export capability.
Yeah.
But that only puts natural gas on a ship. They need to actually find a way to get it off a ship. So, you know, it's looming large, but there are no quick fixes here to help displace all that natural gas that goes by pipeline as opposed to tanker to Italy and to all other parts of Europe. So we do expect that will be, you know, at the forefront. But more broadly, Biden just likes to have a show of unity on these things. You know, we heard that from the G7 call on Sunday. They want to sort of demonstrate, in particular, given the symbolism of some anniversaries this week, that the West and NATO in particular remain united.
Draghi used to run the European Central Bank. He's a former president of the ECB. He knows his way around an economy. He's the man that saved Europe, the Eurozone, in the last crisis. How different a meeting is this going to be? Draghi comes with all kinds of useful insights. What does the president want to get out of him in this conversation? Draghi is moving Italy away from Russia, but he comes with a whole range of other skills as well. How significant is this meeting in terms of understanding how far Europe can be pushed?
Yeah, between him and the Treasury Secretary, Biden is really surrounding himself with central bankers, yeah. Former central bankers. I think that Joe Biden, you know, energy prices are driving a lot of inflation. His aide has been on TV saying that they're really looking more at core inflation, but that the president himself is looking at the whole gamut. That's another way of sort of hinting that Joe Biden's real worry is the cost of gas, food, and not just core things. And so I think when it comes to this, he's going to be trying to sort of pick Draghi's brain on how, when this peak is coming. You know, will core inflation level off? What do we think the future looks like on energy costs? Americans are getting hammered by this. Of course, Americans tend to use a lot more gasoline than a lot of other countries. And so I think we will see him bend the ear there. But really, I think that show of unity is just front and center. And remember, the backdrop here, of course, we've got Secretary Yellen testifying today,
yep,
as well. And we mentioned the speech that Biden just gave. He's really pivoting his message to twofold. One, on trying to really stress the importance of fighting inflation. Democrats have been complaining that he's not doing enough. Our colleague Nancy Cook has a great story on the terminal today about that. And the other is contrasting it with Republicans. He's been ratcheting up the attacks on Republicans, what he calls the, quote, ultra-mega MAGA agenda, to try to draw a sharper contrast. And so we'll see more of that. But they're sort of punting on those questions that we also mentioned on China tariffs and that sort of thing.
Yeah. It's like trying everything. I mean, fact of the matter is, there's a ton of issues in terms of inflation and no easy fixes, as we were just talking about. Josh, thanks a lot. Josh Mangrove joining us there from D.C. And I feel like that's going to be the theme tomorrow, Guy. No matter what number we get from the CPI, it's still going to be high. So if we have hit the top, or even if we haven't, how does it come down quickly to 2%? It's not, I think, is what we're going to be dealing with.
Messler's talking about a long-term strategy of getting it back down to 2%. There's been a lot of discussion about whether or not the Fed would tolerate kind of 3%, 4%. Mm-hmm. And if it was able to do that, it could kind of take its foot off the brake a little bit earlier. But Messler's not talking about that. She's talking about getting inflation back down to 2%.
Yeah.
That's going to be bumpy. This is Bloomberg.
This is The Cable with Guy Johnson and Alex Steele on Bloomberg Radio.
Evening, welcome back. Listen to The Cable. We're live on DAB Digital Radio. Alex Steele over in New York. Guy Johnson joining you here in London. Let's talk about what's happening with Bitcoin. Bit of a bumpy ride over the last couple of days. Bit of a bumpy ride this year, to be honest, like everything else out there. So Bitcoin currently trading at 31,122. It obviously bops around quite a little bit. Yesterday, though, we were below 30,000. Everybody got terribly excited. I'm still trying to understand why 30,000 is so important, but Mike McGlone's here to tell me. Mike, why do I care? Why does the market care about 30,000?
Yeah, you're going to pin me down on that one, Guy. Well, it's a key significant support level, partly because last year when Tesla first allocated, that was the level it was. It was a pivotal level, and it broke up and made new highs. But my sense is there's responsive bids below the market in Bitcoin around 30. We're seeing that now. So, for instance, the S&P 500 has broken support around 4,000, and Bitcoin's holding that key support around 30,000. Even WTI crude oil is breaking support around $100 a barrel. These are trends I expect to continue, and that's Bitcoin outperforming most assets, most notably crude oil, and the stock market. So what's happening so far, we're seeing is Bitcoin has been going down about the same velocity as the stock market, most notably NASDAQ. But when it recovers, it goes up at many X's the stock market. And I think that's going to continue. Right now, we're just in that ebbing tide situation.
So here's a question for you. One of the things I did was coming back to work is I talked to a lot of different people and I said, like, what are your clients asking you? What are the questions that you have, basically to help me do my homework for me? And I'm curious, as Bitcoin sort of, you could argue, hasn't been the safe haven that maybe some had expected. Gold kind of gets the same kind of rap. What's the most popular question you get when it comes to Bitcoin and then also crypto?
Most of the questions I get is how to allocate, because
like everyone wants it, but it's like how to do it.
Yes, how to do it, and a lot of it's about the regulation. So I just went to two key conferences. One was Bitcoin 2022 in Miami, where I live there, and also Crypto Bahamas, which was very institutional.
Whoa! You went to the Bahamas for a crypto conference?
It's 180 miles away from Miami, but I couldn't take it. I had to fly. It was really rough. It was tough duty, but I did enjoy spending the whole time in this really cool conference. But it was all institutional, and there's things like Tony Blair was there speaking with Bill Clinton, sitting next to Sam Bankman-Fried. Now, if that's not an indication of where this space is going, and Tony Blair says the key thing we need to avoid in this space is ignorance. We need to understand it. And now these are two of our former leaders of the country quite involved. So there's so much of this institution. The key thing I hear about is, okay, the people in the place say, give us proper regulations and we will play the game. We can't wait. But right now we don't know the rules. So we're trying to figure that out. And the sense I'm getting is virtually every major institution on the planet now gets it, financial institution, that we need allocation to this space. I mean, I sat next to sovereign wealth funds and pension funds, and they're not really allocated yet, but they're just looking at the right way to do it. Because I think most people know what happened to Kodak and Blockbuster, and they see this as a digital asset. And then you can look at things like Ethereum. Alex, Ethereum's building the infrastructure. So a key thing I'll leave you with is the most widely traded cryptos on the planet are crypto dollars. Tether's number one. It's not Bitcoin. Tether's just one of them. And what made this all happen, what made all NFTs happen is the Ethereum protocol, Ethereum network. So there's a certain thing that's going on with fintech that's quite exciting. And in the meantime, the market went up way too far too fast and the Fed's tightening. So right now, yep, we're just giving back some of those gains.
Where do you look to buy? Like, is it 30,000? Is it 20,000? Are there better entry points coming? Is it 10,000?
Well, I think
at the moment, meme stocks are being battered, and the correlation between meme stocks and crypto has been loose but positive for quite a while. Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of meme cryptos. There's only 19,000 of them, guy, and just a few years ago it was half that, and before that was half that. So there's massive speculation in the space. And what I think the key thing that I'm sensing from the astute professionals is it's not so much buy, it's allocating on dips, and the concept of potentially selling is minimum 10 years. So not looking at it as a short term. These are long term allocations, and that's what's happening. We're purging funds from the leveraged speculators, and they're going into the iron hands of the people who buy and hold and don't plan on selling.
Wow, that was so poetic. But it does sound like a dollar cost averaging kind of broader allocation scenario. Mike, it's a pleasure. It's nice to see you. I forgot for a moment that you moved to Florida, so it's nice to have you next to me. Mike McGlone of Bloomberg Intelligence. Coming up next, we're going to dissect those record high gasoline prices in the U.S. This is Bloomberg.
This is The Cable with Guy Johnson and Alex Steele on Bloomberg Radio.
You're listening to The Cable on Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio. We were just talking about inflation pretty much the whole hour. And I did want to point out something that President Biden spoke about at the top of the hour in terms of gasoline prices. So they're basically saying making homes more energy efficient are going to cut prices, and that they have to boost the global supply in order to cut those gasoline prices. And all of this is as we hit record high retail gasoline and diesel prices, not to mention heating oil. I mean, you name it, any product is tighter. I think the question becomes, how do you do that efficiently? And there's a few issues involved in it. One is that there just aren't as much refiners as there used to be. Also, refiners can be set up to process one type of crude into one type of product, and it's hard to kind of switch that around. China has refining capacity. Will they actually use it then to export stuff? And then also, you have a lot of environmental regulation that has changed how products are used around the world that has also exacerbated some kind of shortages. Guy, none of these are easy fixes.
So let's break it down. China, no chance. Never is that going to happen. They are very careful when it comes to energy security, and they're not going to start exporting refined products. I think the energy efficiency stuff, that's great, but it's going to take a long time to have a meaningful impact. Mm-hmm. Building new refineries or repurposing refineries, I think, is a bit of an issue. I think the rules and regulations around refineries, I think, is going to be an interesting area. A lot of refineries have been shut down because rules and regulations have made them uneconomic. Is there going to be maybe a rethink of that policy around some of these refineries, which may keep some of them pushing more diesel gasoline out for a little bit longer? But that doesn't produce more. It just kind of stops the problem getting worse. So I think this is a really, really difficult problem. And I'm not sure how the Biden administration is going to resolve it. It basically had an SPR release, but that oil, we don't buy barrels of oil. You and I don't buy barrels of oil. Mm-mm. I've never bought a barrel of oil in my life. I fill up my car with diesel or petrol, petroleum, gasoline. And that's the problem that consumers face. And that's where the shortage lies. So releasing the SPR, great. But actually, I'm not sure that actually resolves the problem that we're facing here. So they've got to be much more imaginative here.
No, it definitely does absolutely not alleviate the problem. Also, there's a different mismatch, right? So certain refiners can process certain types of crude. The U.S. has one type of crude. If you're a refiner that can't process that, then what are you supposed to do? And also, to be a complex refiner where you can handle lots of different type of crude quality and turn it into different products, that's quite expensive. So there's not a lot of them out there anymore in comparison to where we had, where there were a few decades ago. In my research, you know, diesel supply in Russia is like 7% of the global supply. That's nothing.
In the UK, we get about a third of our diesel from Russia, or we did get.
I mean, that's huge.
Yep. That's a major problem. Because that's business, that's industry, that's the plumber driving around in a van. And we cannot electrify quickly enough.
Oh, totally. But that's also food. So, like, if you're a farmer, you use diesel. If diesel's too expensive, you don't use it. You don't farm as much. Okay, then there's less food. Then there's higher ag prices. Like, it's a lot of...
Well, you got to transport the stuff as well.
And you got to transport it, yeah. Good point. And, you know, to your point about the refiners, like, do you leave it open a little bit longer to make more diesel? I think this is where government policy has been very confusing for companies, because if you had, there's a push to energy efficiency and ESG 100%. Like, we're going there. Climate change is a problem. We have to get there. Everybody knows that. So why are you going to spend money developing a refiner that's going to make something that in a few years no one's going to want, and that regulations are going to say you can't want? Why would you do that? You can't do that. You're a business. You have to make money, right? So, and bring it back to Draghi. I think Draghi said something at press conference one where he's like, what do you want? Do you want the air conditioner on, or do you want the war to stop?
Yeah, and that's going to be the problem. And that's why, so Andy Haldane, the former chief economist at the Bank of England, who left recently, he's basically indicating that this is going to be a long-term problem. Now, it may not be inflation for a long time, but this price shock that we've been through is going to be with us for a very long period of time. And it's going to work its way through the system. So you're just going to get... You're not going to get the energy inflation because there's a base effect that kicks in, but it's going to work its way through the system, as you say, into agriculture, into transport, into all of these areas. And that is what's going to keep the inflationary momentum going. And this is going to be something that is not going to go away in the short term. This war doesn't look like it's going to end tomorrow. And even if it ended tomorrow, it is unlikely that Russian crude, Russian diesel will be back on the market anytime soon. So this is going to be something that we're going to have to adapt to relatively quickly. And I think it's going to be really quite painful for a long, long time. And Boris Johnson was talking about the fact that governments can't protect the population. And I think what he's really referencing there is that this is not a short-term hit. This is going to be something that's going to be with us for a while. Therefore, our ability to manage it from a government point of view and limit the pain is going to be, well, limited.
And when you say things like, not you, but when one says something like core inflation more important, right? Energy is transitory, so we're not going to pay attention to that. Yeah. There is a real argument out there that that is a big mistake for the reasons you just outlined, because if we transition, it's a long transition.
Yes and no. So the reason I think central banks focus on core is because that's the bit they can control. They can't control food and energy prices.
True.
They can't control, they can destroy demand, but that's a very dramatic step. They can control the core inflation areas of the economy. So that's why they tend to focus on it. But the headline number is what you and I pay for. And as a result of which, they are going to have to look at that. And the only way they can probably deal with that is much more is kind of much more bluntly, and by basically knocking demand out of the economy, which is
exactly
a recession.
Exactly right. And all the people I talked to over the last couple of weeks, that was it. That, like, we're going to have some serious, massive demand destruction. Much more than what we've seen.
It's how massive does it have to be? And this is where I think the calibration problem comes in.
Yeah.
We were talking earlier on to Philip Aldrich, and he was saying, you're going to get a recession, but it may not need to be that great in order to just to kind of tamp down the inflation to a level where actually inflation becomes manageable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's... So the question is, how dramatic does that have to be, I think, is the question that we're still trying to... How finessed can this process be?
Yeah. And that's going to be... sort of the tricky question then for everybody, central bankers, business leaders, people. I don't know. It looks to be pretty dicey.
Interest rates are a blunt tool. They are a sledgehammer. You're trying to crack a nut here. You're trying to be nuanced and finessed.
And interest rates are
a really tough tool to deliver that, because they don't work instantly and they work with a lag. Anyway, CPI data, Germany, China and the United States tomorrow. Big day coming up. This is Bloomberg.